Okay, body language, incredibly important. And you can tell after a while by body language if this fellow is going to be helpful or he's going to be a problem. You can tell by the body language whether this girl is really tough or she's overwhelmed. Whether she'll be open or she will not. Everything. Is, you know, after a while, you don't have to say anything. Everything's being said, see, by the body language. If the fella is coming and you see him as a possible obstacle on her receiving this information because he wants it in there, the baby out, and he's gone. So you observe that, and if he puts himself on the same side as you because he's going to run a block, see, you stay there, but at the last minute, you see, when they're about 15 feet away, you just gently walk to the other side of the sidewalk, see, and turn again. And now suddenly you're at her side. And if he jumps in front of her, now she knows he doesn't want her to get this information. He's not there to protect her, right? So, but it's important for you to read that. And what you do is, sometimes they take this material from them in these clinics, okay? So you have to tell them, put this in your pocket. What we do sometimes is we say, look, they're going to take this from you, so I'll tell you what we do is, we give you one for them, and this is for you. Now, when we give the one for them, we usually take out the guts. We just give them the blue. So we have the inside part there, so what we do is we just give them the blue. It's cheaper, rather than give the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So she gives that to him, puts the rest aside. Then when they take it, see, they know they were right. They weren't lying. They don't want me to have this. And you tell them, they don't want you to have this, because they're going to make money on you having the abortion. Let's not kid ourselves. This is help for you. Okay? So what you're doing is this. The person is coming, and you're looking into the eyes, and you're saying, Mom, God bless you, smiling at them. Here, take this. This is help for you. Now, I want you to have the goodwill, the docility, and the attention. That's the purpose of the exordium. Purpose of the exordium is goodwill, docility, teachableness, and attention. So how do you get the goodwill? How do you get the goodwill? Well, I usually do a simple thing as this. I say, look, Mom, I call them Mom. Chances are they are. Chances are they are. They want to tell me they're not a mother? Fine, okay. But I presume it. I presume they're not of age when they come to these places. Okay? When they come to these places. I said, Mom, look, I know no one comes here unless they have problems, and the problems are real, or they would not be coming here. See, that's not too condemnatory. She looks at you. Okay? In other words, I know that you don't come here unless you have problems, and the problems are real. Now, what you have to do is this. I said, look, this is almost the... So I'm getting the goodwill by granting what I can, but I make a distinction. I make a distinction. And what's the distinction here? You have a problem. People come here with real problems, but there are right and wrong answers to human problems. And people, even your friends, may mean well, but they may give you the wrong answer. They'll say, take the child, take it out. It. It's an it until you have it in their hands. Okay? It's an it. Take it out. And I said, if they do that, Mom, if they do that, you know it's going to happen. Now, you want, when you're trying to reach people, if you use examples, it's easier for them to remember than just making it more theoretical. I make a simple example. I said, suppose you had a fever, and I gave you a glass of cold water. It would seem to remove the fever. But about 10 minutes later, the fever would be back, worse than ever. If I gave you medicine, what happens is this, is the medicine doesn't seem to work. But suddenly the fever's gone. And you're feeling good. And it doesn't come back. Right and wrong answers. The right answer may not be easy. It may take time. The wrong answer may be easy and right away, but in the long run, it's hurtful. And I said, look, I know even your friends, meaning well, give you the wrong answer. They tell you, oh, take it out, you're too young, you're too old, you're not ready, a thousand things, why? I said, and then you do it. And what happens is this. I said, the mother, and I'm talking now, all the while here, I'm talking about the woman inside, not about her. Right? I'm making a distinction. I'm talking about the woman inside. The woman inside, this is why they're in here. They're pregnant, you see, this is what it is. And I said, they're told to take it out. And I said, and they will. And when the baby is removed by the abortionist from the mother's womb, when she's in the recovery room, operating room, she will, her first reaction will be, oh, thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. My womb is empty. I get on with my life. Finally, everything's okay. And about 10 minutes later, in that same recovery room, she's going to say, and I tell you this right now, I said, because I deal with it every day, she's going to say, oh my God, my womb is empty. And then the pain shall come to her head and to her heart. And no one will care. The fellow will not even understand. When she leaves with a broken heart. With a broken heart. You see? It's a reality. And so I said, because it's the wrong answer. It's the wrong answer. Then what you have to do is you have to... now, if you notice this material, the material is pink, blue, and white. You know why. Pink is for the girls, blue is for the boys, you see. It's advertisement, subliminal advertisement. Okay? That's what we call it. See? They do this when you go to movies. When you're watching a movie, they're putting Coke in there. You don't even know it. So after you get a break, you go out and buy Coke. It's right. They do this. It's
popcorn
too. Yeah, I know that. Right into the
popcorn
thing.
And then the Coke.
Yeah. We both get. So what happens is this: is that the mother takes this, and what I'm dealing with now is I'm trying to move her from, in a rapid fashion, I'm trying to move her from, first of all, the world has convinced her that it brings back yesterday, it's really nothing, she's in a state of denial, and this will solve all my problems. Right? And you're trying in a very short period of time to undo the whole false gospel of the world, which is going to destroy her and not remove her problems. I do it every day. I see anyone's outside, and they stay long. Mike and myself, Marina, outside the abortion mill every day for long hours, and we see them before and after. I've never had a woman who came rejoicing because the baby was killed. But we do have women every day that come and say, I'm going to keep my child and smile. Every day, you see? Every day. But the people who have the abortions, I'm going to tell you something, we can't let them go. They're not Christians. And we have post-abortion counseling, but it actually should begin immediately before all the defenses are up. They're right outside that mill every day. Right outside that mill every day. Christ should be there, touching them, opening up the possibility of coming back. You see, very important. So what happens is this, is that the mother, I say to the mother, and this is important, who is the audience that you're dealing with? Who is the audience that you're dealing with? The audience you're dealing with is 50% of those who come to the abortion clinic at this point. I'd say, I do know this, in every major city in the United States, 50% of the women who have abortions will have another abortion. That's a fact. It's a 50% repeat rate where God's people are not there. That repeat rate drops off radically when God's people are there. We may not stop them the first time, but we stop them the second time from coming. Okay? That's why it's so very... So the drop in abortions is not because of contraceptives, that the media tries to tell you that. The drop in abortion rates throughout the United States is because God's people are outside of all these abortion mills across the country. And if we don't get them on the first shot, we are deterring them from coming back. Because this system works off repeat, repeat, repeat. We break the repeat, we're breaking into their pocketbooks. Okay? So, when the mother comes, I'm saying to you, the fact is this, that there's a 50% chance that the woman you're speaking to already had an abortion. And if you don't deal with that, you have a 70% chance of not turning her around. But if you deal with that, you have a 70% chance of keeping this next child. Very important. Very important. How do you deal with this? Well, I say to the mothers, look. Now you know when you are trying to, if you're just giving a talk, people listen to it, and you just, when it was entertained, they go away. But they're not going to act on it necessarily. But if you want to act on it, you have to do something different. If you're giving a talk and you're a trial lawyer, you want a verdict. You want people to act yes or no, guilty or not guilty, see? And so in the trial jury, you want the fellows, look, this man killed this woman. And see, he should be put in jail. And they're listening to the arguments. But if you can bring in, so to speak, the clothes she was wearing, the blood over them, the face, this is what happens, you see? You start to get visible, right? You're, they say, why are you doing that, Father? Because it's not simply intellectual that you're dealing with in this issue. You have to understand that it's not a matter simply of the mind, of convincing people. That's useless if you do not move their will to act on what they've heard. So, it's a couple of things here. It's not only what you say, but it's when you say it and how you say it. All vitally important. What you say, that you say it in a Christ-like way, you say it meaningful. When you say it, you may have to, as I said, put the refutation before the confirmation. You may have to undo the arguments, the obstacles in her way before you make your point. Okay? But how you say it is important. What is the how? The how deals with, you're not talking to an angel. You're not talking to an animal. You're talking to a human being. And a human being has an intellect. A human being has a will. A human being has an imagination. And when you're talking to this person, you have to say it in such a way that you're not only talking about the how, you're not talking to convince them intellectually. How many people, you get up in the church and you say, they're killing babies, they're telling me to do, and you want them to come. And then the next day you're at the abortion mill and you think the whole church is coming because they applauded you. And there you are, see, with Mike Marino and myself and a little old lady, that's it. There's no one else there. Where are all those people that were applauding? You see? They're not here. So, because there's something besides informing. Informing. That's the intellect. You must touch the will. You must be persuasive. You must move the person to act. Must move the person to act. So I'm saying to, in a court case, if you want a verdict, innocent or guilty, okay, what you're doing is you are presenting the case, and then if you can bring in something visible, tangible, that they can see what happened. Here's her picture. This is how she looked. See, in the papers, don't they love to do that? Recently now, here's this beautiful young woman before, after. Murder. Put him in jail. See? After. You didn't see the before and after. You couldn't do it. See? That's better than 1,000 words. Just the 2 pictures. You follow that? See? Now, people say, oh, don't show the pictures of the unborn. Are you kidding me? That's like a trial case in which I'm not going to show the jury what happened. I want to act. I don't want just to be nice. I want to say, hey, you don't do that. I want it to be moved. No, that's going to happen again. So where, how do you do that? Well, we do it in here. Okay? We do it in here. The did you know? You see the did you know? Now, how you use this, I should explain to you. And if you don't move their will, I've got news for you. They will listen politely. They'll be very gentle, very nice, but they're going to go and kill that kid very sweetly. You're going to find this out. You think, oh no, I reached them. Yes, you did, intellectually. Still going to kill the kid. Because you didn't put enough realization. You have to move the will. Persuade them strongly to act on what the knowledge they have received. That's important. Important. See? So what happens is this. This particular thing we use, and how you use it is this. I said, I have a very clever entrance to this. I usually say, did you know? Okay, so that's what I'm saying. Anyway, I say, did you know? Did you know? And I say, did you know that, this is how to use it. Did you know that this is what the children look like in the wombs of the women inside? Can I do this now? This is the children, mothers inside, this is what the child looks like. Inside. I'm talking about her inside. This is 8 to 10 weeks. 8 to 10 weeks. Now, if you have a little child with you like this, a fetal model, that's 10 weeks. Okay? That's again, see, visible? See, I have it in my hand like this. I can move it around. See it looking? Okay? Interesting, see? Okay? I see that. Because they're told it's a nothing. It's just a blood clot. It's a nothing. Right now, they're pushing through embryo stem cell research. So they got to push through more and more and more. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. No, it's life. Human life. And it's murder. And it's going to be funded by taxpayers' money at a rate that we've never seen before. I remember the late Holy Father, John Paul II, speaking to the American bishops in November of 1998. He had them in Rome. And he said, I tell you this right now. He said, the 20th century was a century of blood and tears, wars and more wars. And he said, we would hope that the 21st century would be a century of hope. So I tell you right now, he said to them, if you do not limit, guide, correct the revolution that's going on now in technology, in the biosciences, on human life in the womb, you see, instead of it being instead of the 21st century being a springtime of hope, it will not be a springtime of hope. It will be an age of barbarism. So far, barbarism. If you know what's going on around the world, it's barbaric. Barbaric. The British government, you know, just voted through overwhelmingly to grow life in the laboratories, human life, and to mesh it with animals, hybrids. Grow parts. It's going to be returned right here. But it's going to be funded. It's being funded in Britain, and it will be funded here. We're out of our minds. We don't think that this whole embryo stem cell research is not going to be growing life, experimenting on life, and whatnot. It's barbaric. It's barbaric, okay? It really is. And it's frightening. It is frightening. God's justice, you know? God, how long suffering God is. Really is. We have to be with it. But it is difficult. But anyway, what happens is this, is that we teach, looking at this, I'm saying, the woman inside, this is what the child looks like. The child looks like. Now, you open it this way. Open it this way. You need these visible things for the world, for the world, for the world. Because you know and I know, anybody's been outside an abortion clinic, you can speak, and they agree, and they still go in and kill the kid. Anybody that's out there, you know that happens. Because you didn't touch the will. You didn't shock them into, I can't do it. You see? I won't do it. So what happens is, you open it up and you say, you see that? I usually sort of have them laugh a bit. I say, you see that little feet there? That's 10 weeks. Replica. 10 weeks. Put the feet. That's what, and I switch now. Not the child in the womb, in the mother's inside. That's what my feet look like. It was. My mother had a tough time, I tell them, trying to get shoes for me. You see that? But she must have found them. And I said, she did, you see? Yeah, but it was a tough time. See? I said, that's just your feet, my feet. Look, as we were in the womb beneath our mother's heart. And I'm going for the emotions. And I'm going for the guts. All right? In the heart. So, I said, now I'm talking about the child in the womb, inside the mother's, inside. I'm talking about you and me and the person I'm speaking to. And I said, now, when a person is upset, you drop your voice. I remember, I used to teach young fellas, okay? And they would try to distract me from Virgil, the Aeneid, okay? And I knew it. So I'd talk about either Yankees or life, and we'd go off in this fire, see? But then I'd say, okay, that's it, shut up. Okay, Father, back to work, see? Okay? As fellas, no problem. If I did that to a classroom of girls, it'd be the end of the day, the end of the year. Shut up. You know, I couldn't do that. What? What do you mean? I mean, shut up. You see, what do you mean? That's what I mean. Oh, no, you said shut up. And no, I said shut up. No, you didn't say, you said shut up. Oh, God, what have I done? What have I done? You see? Why? The truth is this. This is the truth. I learned this. Teenage girls live 80% of their time in their feelings. It's the truth. You disturb their feelings, you've had it for the day, if not the week, if not for a lifetime. Now, teenage fellas have absolutely no feelings. This is true. I mean, you ever see them? They're killing each other, and suddenly you go back later and they're hugging each other and talking like nothing happened. And they're like puppy dogs fighting one another. So you go back and it's like, hey, why don't you guys just fight? What do you mean? What do you mean? Is the difference? So young fellas have to learn to get feelings, sympathy. And young women have to learn to control their feelings and use their mind, not to be made fools of. See, don't let the fellow work off your feelings, which they do all the time. They bring the girls down. All the time. You see? They bring it for an emotional ride. Emotional ride. So, what happens is this. When a person's upset, you lower your voice. And I lower my voice and I say, do you know? And I show it again. You see the little child here. See the little child here. I said, inside, really 3 to 4 minutes is all it takes for the suction machine. People don't realize that. Everything's preparation afterwards. 3 or 4 minutes. They're going to go in with their suction machine, and they're going to just, it's about 28 times stronger than an average vacuum cleaner. And they're just going to tear that kid apart, suck it right out into the bottle, you see? And the results are going to be, well, it's going to be like this. Then you open it up. See? You open it up. Now, two doctors from Notre Dame University, Catholic doctors, told me, Father, it's like a meat grinder. Like a meat grinder. That's what it is. Like a meat grinder, you see? And I close it again. I close it again. Don't make it used to it. And then I say, you see the little arms here? Right? Okay. I open it again. I say, I point out the little arms. I said, you can still see it. Right? I close it again. I say, see the little feet? I open it again. I said, you can still see the little feet. And then I say to them, look, no matter how difficult things are in your life, and I know they are, no matter how, don't let anyone do this to your child. See, I'm going for the verdict of innocence. I'm going for an acquittal of the unborn child. I'm pulling out all stops. But do it nice. That's a reality, okay? Now, here's my problem. 50% of the time, the woman I'm speaking to already has had the abortion. You say, well, how could you do this, Father? Cruel. Mm-hmm. How could you do this? Well, I tell you this. If I don't do it, I am cruel. If I don't do it, I am weak. If I don't do it, I don't love her. Because this is what you must do. How do you handle this? Well, I say to the mothers, look, the woman inside, please God, they'll choose life. But if they do not, God doesn't stop loving them. Nor will we. When they come back out, we will approach them. We'll tell about God's mercy and God's love. Now, once they know the truth, they have to act on the truth. You see? And then I will say to the person, look, maybe you've had a number of abortions yourself. There's light at the end of the tunnel. God's merciful. Once you know the truth, act on it. Don't go down that path again. You know how painful it is. How painful it is. And inevitably, incredibly, people will tell me about their abortions that they've had that they never told anyone. Now we're on the way for peace, for healing, opening up the way for a turnaround, okay? A turn. If she's going in with a past abortion, she feels, I'm going to hell anyway, what difference does it make? I'm going to convince myself it was okay to do it the first time by doing it again. All those things are against you. So if you don't take that into account, your effectiveness is going to go down the tubes. But if you take into account and you make it known to her God's incredible mercy and love, and once sometimes we do things we don't realize it. And if we realize it, God will forgive us. But don't continue again and again and again. You see? Now, what you have to do is this. You have to, on the other hand now, the confirmatio is presenting strong arguments for your case. You have to start to build up within her an understanding, an image of the child as a blessing. because everybody's portraying the child as a curse. Everybody's portraying the child as, oh my God, it's like you got cancer. You're pregnant? My God, you see? Oh, it's only cancer. You're pregnant? Is it really? Incredible. So you have to portray the child. That's a confirmatio, your strong argument. I think, look it. I know it's not easy, it's difficult, but who's going to be loving you years from now? Who's going to be loving you years from now? I said, the child will. When you're old, and who's going to be at your bedside? And you could tell stories. Okay, you could tell that story. I'll tell a story. My mother, okay, when she, with difficulties. And you know, I tell a story. There was one time my sister Anne, she was with very high fever. We were poor. I realize it now, quotes, poor, see? But we had, by then, you know, we had coal in the furnace, you know, and wood and so forth. We didn't have any wood. So my mother said, well, we have to chop up the kitchen set to start the fire, right? Which we did, you see? And we had to end up sitting on the floor eating the meals the next couple of months. We got money together to get another kitchen table set. But it was worth it because of Anne. See, and Anne recovered. It was good. See? In other words, you start to tell them about, yes, of course, sacrifice. It didn't, but who, when at the end, when my mother was dying, who was there? Anne and her seven children, six children. You see? Who was there? All the children. See? And we learned about life. That what did our parents give to us? Not money. Who knows now? We're below the so-called poverty line. Right? But we were rich because they gave us life. They gave us how to live life, wisdom. And they gave us love. If you can give that to your child, no matter how poor you are, they are the richest of the richest children. And you can. That's within your means. Right? You can give your child life. You can give to your child how to live life. That's really important. And you can give the child your love and teach by the love of God. See? So you don't have the other means. So what? There are children that have everything, they got nothing. They're rich and they're poor. See? So that's the reality of it. So you're starting to tell them, look, I don't care if you're poor and you have to struggle. That can make you better, a holy person. This can make, and the child is going to be a blessing to you. So you start to build up a positive argument of, and I said, and you know, when this child is born, guess what? Everybody is going to want to hold the child. The child comes in, a little baby comes into the room. I don't even, as a priest, try to get attention. I know it's all over. It's all over. The child rules. That's God's truth. You ever see that? Oh, the little baby, you see? And those who were told you to get an abortion, you see, they will actually be spoiling the kid because their conscience is bothering them. You've got to watch it. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. But when you're holding that child, you'll know all the sacrifices was worth it. See, you've got to paint the picture. You've got to give them a different vision, different understanding. It's worth it. This is the means. You see, very, very important. With a person who has an abortion, let me just say this. The people who come back out and have the abortion, okay? We're there. When you are counseling, you counsel everybody that comes because the salvation of the souls are at risk, all of them. They're called accomplices. You have to turn them into apostles. You turn back into apostles, they'll bring the material to the woman. They'll call her on the cell phone. Okay? That happens every day. We're talking to people, and it ends up that you give it to the other person, and they go back in, they talk, and they bring it back out. I had just a couple of days ago, I asked the fellow to go in and get her, you see? He did. And he said, oh, she won't do it. I said, go in. We'll pray, you see? And when you do, when they go in and pray, you go over to the prayer group immediately, tell them, pray, this person just gone in. Pray. See? Keep the prayer group focused, that their prayers are very purposeful and meaningful, okay? And they are. And so what happened is, she came back out, and the two of them, anyway, enjoying, crying and laughing, and the whole nine yards, see? So everybody that comes is in need of counseling. So when you think of sideward counseling, do not think you're counseling the mother. You're not. You're counseling everybody who needs conversion that comes to that site, okay? And everybody that works in there, your presence, prayerful, is converting them. After a while, if you don't say things to them, don't curse them, don't be kind and merciful and loving. After a while, they're apologetic for going in and telling you, I got to get out of this hellhole. Matter of fact, then people come out to tell me, I'm out of the hellhole, Father. You see? This is what the reality is. So your prayerful presence is incredibly important. Now, let me say this. If a person has the abortion, what do you do? Well, you don't let them go. If you treated them with love and respect and dignity. If a person's going in spite of everything you're saying, you don't become strident. You don't become condemnatory. You become more loving, more gentle, more trusting in God. It's not you anyway. See, if you do the job outside, 96% of the people that we turn around, the helpers turn around, actually go inside. Very few do we actually turn around on the side with that they walk away. But if they experience a Christian approach, a Christian community, and love outside, and they go inside, and they're treated like someone in an assembly line, they're treated like someone that is, well, how are you going to pay for this? There can't be the Spirit of God in there. You cannot duplicate the Spirit on the sidewalk inside. Impossible, impossible. Okay? So, if you treat them with love and respect, when they come back out, they're not angry with you. They feel they've disappointed you. They feel that they've let you down. They've let you down, you see? So what do you do? Well, this is very important. When people are come outside, including the accomplices, I call them, it's important that you, timing, not just what you say, how you say it, when you say it. Watch their body language. Notice when's the time to speak, when's not the time to speak, you see? When the mother comes back out, and she comes back out, and she's not afraid of us, she feels she disappointed us. She feels sad because of the loss, but she also knows experience, we were right. So if you go over to the gently, and you don't offer this to say, oh, I'll do it next time. No, you don't do that. You don't do that. See, you offer this, a rosary. You go and you say, and by the way, the rosary is the most powerful means we have of turnarounds. Everybody knows that. We give rosary, we hang it in our hands, we give them to them, they take them, people of all faiths and no faiths, and when they take the rosary, we give them how to say the rosary. Okay? This is from the Fatima in Washingtonville, the shrine. It's very beautiful. It has the 20 mysteries of the rosary, you see? It has the prayers, everything with it. And we give this to them with a pair of rosaries. These rosaries are blessed because we blessed them there, but it's also by the people who made them, were praying, you see? So, when the mother comes out, we go over to her, and very quietly, very gently say, may I give you a gift? She goes, may I give you a gift? Because she, God loves her. I don't know. I know what she did was wrong. I don't know if she knew it was wrong until she did it. Big difference, understand? I say to you, some people, after they crucified Jesus, I am sure that night, all the people that were at Golgotha, at Calvary, they were all different reactions that night. The 12th station here in the chapel, if you look at it, you go up there, Jesus is crucified and everybody's leaving. And it's rather interesting to see the expressions on people's faces, like, my God, what have we done? What have we done? We've crucified our God. They could not have gone home. Because you've got to remember, it was in the beginning of the week, everyone was rejoicing that Christ had come to Jerusalem, the Savior of the world, the King of Kings, and we crucified our God. The girl is a natural reaction. When you're pregnant, there's a joy, life. My God, I took that life, you see? I took that life. So when a woman comes out, and she comes out, I go to her with a pair of rosaries, and I simply say, may I give you a gift? So I said, and I put it in her hand, like this. A gift, see? And I say, Mother, if you pray, I tell them, if you pray, you never come back here again. If you don't pray, they probably will be back here again. And I know you don't want to come back here again. See that? I didn't even mention the word abortion. And she will say, you are right. You are right. See, no defenses are up now. She knows she's been taken. It's long enough from the time the womb was empty that it was hit her like a ton of bricks. Okay? Herself a pinch of down. And what happened is, I say to the mother, look, God is merciful. We do things that are wrong in our life, see? But God will forgive us. But we do have to change whatever brought you here. Whatever brought you here. Bishop Yale used to say to me, if a mother's sorry for an abortion, why don't you absolve her right away? Bishop, it's not that easy. Not that easy. I said, Bishop, there's 10 commandments, not only fifth, there's the 10 commandments of God, and the fifth commandment is the last one to go. And I had to motivate her to be sorry for the other 9, okay, before I can give her the absolution from the 10th, you see, or the 5th, whatever it is. But the thing is, it's the beginning of a conversion, a turning around, if God's people are there. Because when she comes out, her self-opinion, her sense of her importance is so low, she thinks that neither God nor man nor anyone could or should love her. And if she feels that those pro-lifers just condemn me, right, then we play right into their hands. Right? But if you were loving and gentle, she doesn't hate you. She feels she's disappointed you. See, so if she goes in, you don't become more structured. Don't put the blood will be upon you. You don't do that, you see. Oh no, you're playing right into the hands of the world. No. You say, please read it. We'll pray for you. We'll be here. See? So when she comes back out, you are there. And you're there with the love of Christ, you see? And so what you're doing is, when she comes back out, you tell about God's love, God's mercy. See? And how God's mercy and love, how But Norv, God will forgive us, but we must change. We must be sorry, that's all. And that means whatever brought us here has to be changed. Whatever brought us here. Now, I guess at that point I want to just do a little digression here. Post-abortion symptoms, right? What does that mean? Why does this happen? Because we are a nation in denial. We are denying that there is a child being killed and there is a loss. And the person going in there is in a state of denial. Denying the reality, see? And after she does it, if she continues to deny the loss, she does not grieve. And when she doesn't grieve, then it results in changes in habits, personality, from eating disorders, from drinking, from opinion of herself being very low, etc., etc., etc. Okay? Those are the results of a denial of the fact of a loss. Got that? That's very important. Now, let me give you an example. If you had someone belonging to you, very close to you, and they got an opinion from the doctor that they had cancer, terminal. They came home and they told you that. So I can't believe this. Go get another opinion. So you go get another opinion. Doctor says terminal. My God. So what do you do? You say, well, let's start a novena. Let's start praying. So you're praying for a 9-day novena, 50 days, that may be, okay? And at the end of the novena, you go to the doctor again. Comes back, terminal. Okay? So the first thing is a state of denial, disorientation. Then you go from that to bargaining with God. If we say this and do this, then it will not be there. Right? And then finally it comes back, it's there. Now you can become angry. Why my mother? Why my husband? Why my son? And that guy across the street, God should take him, he's a rat. but that's precisely why God's not taking him, because he's a rat. There are rats in heaven. He's got to shape up, okay? He's got to shape up before. But your husband's ready, you see? There's a difference. Okay, that's the reality, okay? So what happens is then people begin, all this period of time, people are giving you some sympathy, consolation. It's a very interesting thing. No one wants to go to heaven unless they're sick. Can I volunteers today? And no one will allow us to go to heaven, our loved ones, unless we become very sick. Interesting. So as this disease progresses, then everybody's praying to God to take your loved one. And finally he does. And then you have the wake. And at the wake, everybody's giving you further consolation, helping you to adapt to your new situation, consolation, so forth, so forth. So you go through this whole process. Now take a person, a situation. A person drops dead of a heart attack. There's no second opinions. There's no period of consolation. There's no going into bargain and denial. You're into the wake. Into the wake. And so we used to run seminars for widow and widowers called After the Flowers Are Gone, for quick deaths. when they had to go through a period of grieving, period of grieving. We went in after the flowers are gone. They identified with it immediately. See? Now I'll take another case. If a person, a loved one, takes their life, suicide, same as a heart attack, except that you're into the wake, you're gone, but now you have two things here: grieving, but also feeling guilty. You say, should I have seen it coming? Could I have said something? Was it something I should have done before this, et cetera. So you see, you start to eat yourself up. Now I take the case of an abortion. It's the suicide without doubt. I caused it. Understand how painful this is? I caused it. And there is no consolation. No one gives you any consolation. There's no grieving allowed. It's a constitutional right. You did it yourself. What's your problem? Understand this? It is incredibly painful. It's absurd. It's absurd, see? So what happens is, you're not allowed to express grief. You're not allowed to admit this. What are you going to do? How am I going to handle this? It's impossible. So you're going to state a denial. They have post-abortion symptoms. Now, if you admit that it is a loss, then you have not only grief, you have the need for forgiveness. Will God forgive me? Will my child forgive me? Will I forgive myself? How about everybody that drove me to this when I should have been stronger and told to go to and stood with my child? Can I forgive them? Understand that? Not easy. Not easy at all. Not easy at all. See? So there is the forgiveness part. Not only admitting of the guilt, the grief, the loss, but then once you do that, how can I handle this forgiveness? First of all, the understanding of God is wrong in that they sense they feel God is vindictive. God will punish them. God will not forgive them. And I told you, God never stopped loving them. God never stopped loving them. They stopped loving God. Their unborn child who was with God never stopped loving the parents. Never. You don't have to convince the child. Like, what will I say to my child? Nothing. The child will throw you a party. Theologically. Okay? And God will, of course God never stopped loving you. For all eternity he knew this. And he made you. And he knew it. And he forgives you. You have to know to forgive yourself. You have to forgive yourself. But the thing is this, forgiving of others. Forgiving others. So in other words, the post-abortion symptoms are not the cause of the first abortion. They are the effect of the first abortion. Make that distinction clear. Post-abortion symptoms are not the cause of that first abortion. They are the effects of the first abortion, which could cause a second abortion. But they're not the cause of the first abortion. What is the cause of the first abortion? That's again now, knowing the people to whom you're speaking. When they come, two women come, right? Both pregnant. One ends up choosing life, the other doesn't. How come? He said the same thing to both people. One chose life, one did not. Because there's a difference. One person could come from a loving family. One person could come from a situation where everybody's trying to encourage them. And it's very easy, that final encouragement, to do it right and they follow through. Another may be coming from a situation that no one in that family is encouraging her. They're abusing her. She might have gotten child abuse. A thousand reasons. Everything in that background, dysfunctional family stuff that she has, is being brought to that site, to that spot. And so for her to forgive all of that which brought her to the abortion is not easy. Not easy. And you have to understand that. This is the person you're speaking to. Now, you can do an awful lot if you may be the first one that's treating her with dignity, with respect, with love, with reverence in her life. And you're giving her, speaking the truth, and you're speaking it with love and with reverence and respect, that in itself, with God's grace, that she can respond to for the first time. So even if she had the abortion, you have to be with her to help her to go through, remove the denial, allow her to grieve, and then the grief then results in, it has to have forgiveness, assure the forgiveness of God and the child and others, and that she, like God, who came into a broken world, if she forgives the others, if she's not condoning what they did to her. Forgiveness is not condoning the evil being done to you. He simply says, I forgive, it's your problem now. You don't have to convince me to act, to change my heart. My heart's changed. It's your heart that needs to be changed. You see? That's very important. And you can only do that with the grace of God. And what you're encouraging you to do is to do that with God's help and God's grace. Okay? So when you're out in the street, it's a holy, blessed word. But the more you know what you're about, what you're doing, see, the more you actually start to think and reflect and encourage, the more you can accomplish and God will work through you. So when a person then receives this matter, we, with a pink one, we don't have ultrasound machines. Okay, we don't have ultrasound machines, so we do the next best thing. We give the 9 months of pregnancy. Because inside, they will tell them, how many weeks they are. Why? Because that determines the price. That's why. And if you notice so often, people come out who have twins, they will come out and keep the children. That's because they will not show them this ultrasound machine unless it's twins. And they show them the sonogram in the case of twins because they're charging them twice the price. Because they're killing two babies. Therefore, that's the reason why they have to show them the ultrasound. But normally, if they show them the ultrasound picture, they're fired. They're let go immediately. They are not allowed. Matter of fact, even in the medical textbooks, it tells the people performing abortions, turn the ultrasound machine away so the person hearing the abortion cannot see it. See it. Amazing, you see? So we give them this, and they can look at it, okay? And they can look at it and see the 9 months development, because they are being told the amount of weeks that they are in the pregnancy. And what happens is this, the negative consequences, okay, if you want the refutatio, refuting of going the direction of having the child, it's in here. You can stress again the negative effects on their lives in terms of physical, psychological, emotional, spiritual. It's in the pamphlet again. And the pamphlet shows, like, the picture development of the child is positive. Where they can get help is right there on the front page. They're not alone. God is with them. People will help them, etc. You see? And in the bottom of it, we have post-abortion healing. We have the post-abortion healing. We have Rachel's Helpers and the Sisters of Life programs that they have, they can call. So you point that out to the people when they come back out. You say to them, look, you see the bottom here. You can call. You can call. Okay, I'm just going to conclude with this because we're going to get you up to adoration. Okay? This is a true story. There was a fellow brought a girl, big powerful guy, and he brought it to the abortion mill, and he told me, if I said one word to her, that I was history. I'm trying to, what does that mean? Oh, I'm just a simple man. What does it mean I'm history if I say one word, see? So he's just glaring at me, and I tried to get the material, but I saw him, he put the material in the garbage, you see? So he went inside, but they're both pretty nasty, to tell you the truth. And he came back out, and I know he's waiting for me to say the word to make me history. So I sort of there, and he's out there, and he lights up a cigarette. Now, as he's lighting up the cigarette, the group, John Foley and that whole crowd, they're over there praying. See, they're praying, and the Museum for Life is around the exhibit, see? And what the thing is now, you're timing, when to approach the person, very, very important. When the person comes out for a cigarette, right, please don't go rushing over to them, they'll throw away the cigarette, go back inside. Let them take a few good draws on the cigarette. Let the old the nicotine, narcotic, addiction kick in, you see? So that they won't throw it away. They'll listen to you get that cigarette, this last drag, you see, this type of thing. So you let them drag. Take it, you see? But you also let him look, see? He sees the people. He's taking the drag. He's looking at me. But then he starts to catch the picture of the unborn child, the head. We have the head. Because that's where I want conviction. See? And so he sees the people praying. So I can see he's changing. Changing. His mentality is changing. The body language is telling me that. So I go over, and what I do is I go over to him, and I go by him. He's there right next to the wall, and I know if I say a word, I still may be history. So I say, so I go by him, and I sort of walk by him, okay? And he's looking. And I stop, and I turn around, and I come back, and I walk by him again. See, I'm still a coward. So I do it again. Repeat the darn thing. See, go back and forth. See, and now he's watching me. You see? See the old pendulum effect, you know? See the old pendulum effect? See? It's like a tennis match. You see, you shouldn't be at a tennis match on the side. You know, that's crazy. I keep going like this. You see, back and forth. But the old pendulum effect, see? And I'm going back and forth, back and forth. See? Now, we were in no hurry out there. We even had to be, we don't leave at 2 o'clock, so I might as well just enjoy myself. So I go back over to him. See, and I go to him, and I stop, I turn around, and leave again. See, at this point, he's can't believe this. So then I go past him again, stop, come back. This time now, I go up to him. See, and I stop. See, I turn around, and I say to him, "Did you read this?" And he says to me, "I can't hear you. Will you speak louder?" Now, here's a guy that said, if I say a word on history, and he's begging me to speak louder. Okay? This is crazy. So I say to him, look, I say, young women come here, and there's real help for them. Okay? And if they find out later that there was help for them, then they're going to curse the people who stopped them from getting that help. Let me tell you now. See, I said, why don't you give this to her so she knows this help? And I already know he threw it in the garbage. See? But now, at this point, I know he's starting to change. I see the body language. He's watching the people praying. He's seeing, like, what have I done? And he's praying there. And he says, what have I done? He looks at the material, the cigarette. Now, watch them on the outside. If they light up a cigarette, and they're watching what you're doing, how do you know that? Because the cigarette is burning and they're not puffing it. You see? Yes. Okay? This tells you they're preoccupied. If they're puffing away, they're just germs of it. But once you get that they stop, that they don't even know the cigarette is in their hands, it's just burning. Now you got them. So watch the body language. Watch everything out there. See? So what happens is, he then says to me, I went over to him, and he said, my God, what have I done? What have I done? Because he looked at the materials, he saw it, and he said, what can I do? And I said, here, take these rosaries, and that's okay, my friend just got here. She's standing me up because I didn't call her up. I said, take these rosaries, go inside and pray. So this big guy that wanted to make me history, he takes the rosaries, goes inside, and he's praying. He's in there for at least an hour and 15 minutes praying. And I went off to the prayer group immediately and said, "Is Florian, get praying for her, please, okay?" So he goes in. Meanwhile, she's gone downstairs. She's on the gurney being rolled in. See? And he comes back out. I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm thirsty. I've got to get something to drink." I said, "Wait a second. I said, "Didn't they tell you?" He said, "What?" I said, "It's prayer and fasting. You can't have anything to drink. Go back inside." And he says, "Do I have to?" I said, "Yes, you do." So he went back inside. And he was praying and fasting. God's truth. Can God fight? It's a true story. So what happened was, he's inside, praying and fasting, and she's rolled into the operating room on the gurney. Okay? She said, and for whatever reason, he gets the grace. I can't do this. And she gets up and goes back out and gets dressed, and there's a big waiting room inside there. It's about the size of this room here. And she comes out through that door, and he's on the other side. And she comes out of, back up to the waiting room, and she doesn't know how to tell this guy he's going to kill her. You see? Because he knows how angry she was. So she comes up and she puts her head down as she starts walking across the room towards him. And he said, "Oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? What have I done?" And she came over to him and she said very quietly, I can't do it. I can't do it. And he said, "What?" She said, "I can't do it." And he said, "Thanks be to God." And he broke down crying and embraced her. That's God's truth, you see. And they both came out to tell me the story. That's what happened, you see. They came out, that's how I know the whole thing. And then they took everything. And there's down 3rd Avenue, 43rd Street, it's like, actually it's 8 lanes on the ground, 8 lanes above. That's a danger. 3rd Avenue is very hard, not a lot of traffic. But the two of them go right into the middle of 3rd Avenue, you see. And he stops in the middle of 3rd Avenue, and he stops and he turns around, and he holds the beads up, and he shouts back to me, This is a true story. Monsignor, you are right. Prayer and fasting works. Yeah, sure. True story. True story. Yeah. So we're going to do a little praying now. We're going to do a little praying.
On that history.
On that history. Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
if that prayer and fasting didn't work, I wouldn't be here. I would have had history. I would have had history. Okay. What we're going to do is the Blessed Sacrament is exposed. We're going to, if you can go the steps, if you can't, we'll try to get up another way. But down at the end of this corridor here, the steps go right up into the chapel. Into the chapel. Blessed Sacrament is exposed. We will have, at about 7 minutes to five, we'll have benediction. Okay, and then after benediction, we're going to come back down here. We're going to go to the retreat dining room, have a bite to eat, and then come back here for the closing part. Okay? So, I thank you.
I believe in Jesus.